From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Happy birthday, by the way, to Coast listener Brennan Callen of Kentucky. 52 big ones. Later tonight, the occult. Here's what's happening. Well, the number of potential customers that have been affected now by a foodborne illness outbreak at a Chipotle Mexican Grill in Ohio may now be much higher than initially believed. The Delaware General Health District out there said that it had received a total of 518 inquiries already, emails and calls related to a possible outbreak stemming from a Chipotle in Powell, Ohio. Jeez, they're getting blasted over there lately. Pope Francis has declared that the death penalty is never admissible and that the Catholic Church will work towards the abolition around the world. This was a formal Vatican announcement today. How is it possible to spend 12 hours a day in front of a screen or listening to music, media multitasking? Many people use more than one device at a time, and just a few years ago, Americans spent an average of 11 hours consuming media per day. According to Business Insider, Americans are reaching peak media, which means that there won't be much more media consumption time or growth over the next few years. Our expert on the Internet, Lauren Weinstein, with us. Do people really spend that much time, Lauren, with us?
Well, yes and no, right? I mean, when you dig down into these statistics, what you find is that they include all kinds of different things. So we're not just talking about online media. We're not just talking about watching television. We're not just talking about, things you do through video streaming online. It's all of it together. So when you look at it in terms of the additional time spent, in addition to what has been conventional, traditional television viewing, you find that, yes, the time has gone up, but television, regular television, still makes up the bulk. It's still the majority of the time. And even for regular TV viewing, not to mention when you're online, you know, doing whatever you're doing online with social media or sending email or watching a video, most of us multitask. We're not just sitting there staring like a zombie at one thing for hours on end. There's all kinds of different things going on. You know, I'm logged in pretty much from dawn till dusk, and beyond dusk for that matter, every day. I've been doing it for many years. There's nothing wrong with me, obviously, right?
That's right. You probably spend 15 hours a day doing it, at least.
Well, yeah, and that's not a joke. That's true. I mean, this is how I have spent my career. And the thing is that even when you're doing that, even when you're spending so much time online, it's a matter of using your judgment. You take breaks. You do different things. So, you know, whether you're watching the news or you're watching a funny video or whether you're writing an email or putting a post on social media, these are all really different kinds of activities. And if statisticians want to kind of bulk them all together and say, yeah, you're spending 11 hours a day, 15 hours a day at it, that's fine. But in reality, it's like anything else we do. We kind of compartment things into different zones. We do different things at different times, different things at the same time. And I think in that respect, it's really no different than it's ever been. It's just that it's now with more advanced technology, so there's kind of a more alarming sense to it that you can put into these stories when these stories are written.
Lauren, I get lots of emails about your website when you're on, so would you give it out to folks?
Yeah, the easiest way is just to go to vortex.com, V-O-R-T-E-X.com, and that points at all my other venues and efforts that are out there.
Thank you, sir. I always appreciate your input into the show. Apple has become the first $1 trillion publicly listed U.S. company, crowning a decade-long rise that's been fueled, of course, by the iPhone. Congratulations to those over at Apple. In Pennsylvania, several people spending the day at the Kennywood Park were shaken up in the afternoon when the park's popular pirate ship ride malfunctioned and crews were unable to stop it for 10 minutes. Now, this giant ship swings back and forth like a pendulum. No injuries were reported, but several of the riders became really nauseous. Little kids were screaming. Other people were crying. It was unbelievable. How'd you like to get stuck on a ride like that, and it just doesn't stop? A Minnesota man has been arrested after picking up an 8-year-old boy and tossing him off a water slide to more than 30 feet below. The 8-year-old boy sustained multiple broken bones in stable condition at a hospital. What is wrong with people? A new radio telescope in Canada is doing its job picking up mysterious signals from deep space known as fast radio bursts. The Canadian Hydrogen Intensity Mapping Experiment in British Columbia detected the first ever FRB at frequencies below 700 megahertz on July 25th. Let's check in with Seth Shostak from the SETI Institute. Seth, what does this mean? Have we found something?
Well, the Canadians have, George. They've got a new telescope, and they found a new object with the appealing name FRB, for fast radio burst, 180725A, which is, of course, the date on which they found it. So it's pretty nifty, but fast radio bursts are actually not new. They're relatively new. The first one was found about 10 years ago by a guy in West Virginia, but he was actually using data that was collected with a radio telescope in Australia. But they're exactly what they sound like, fast radio bursts. They're fast, they're in the radio, and they're bursts. They're like a glissando on a flute, you know. Well, I didn't do that very well, but it's a note that goes down kind of in an eye blink, and that's what they found. And for them, it's very interesting because it shows their instrument works.
And does this mean that we might have some ETs out there, Seth?
Well, you're addressing the question that everybody asks. What are these things? What are making these radio whistles? And the answer to that is, we don't know the answer to that. Not yet. There have been about 20 of them found, but the real problem is they don't repeat. You know, you hear them once, and then they're gone, and that doesn't give you the opportunity to go back and look with some other kind of instrument that would tell you, for example, how far away they are. If you knew that, you'd know how powerful they were. The one that did repeat, there's one. It was found to be from a galaxy 3 billion light years away.
Wow.
That's a long distance.
That's
so
a long way.
What are they? Black holes, neutron stars, aliens. I mean, it could be anything, and you know, we're not going to know until we find a lot more. There are probably 1,000 of these things going off every night, well, every day and every night, and this new Canadian scope is going to be able to track them down.
Now, the signals that have been beamed into space from us over the years, for example, voices, you know, from a radio station.
Right.
Would ETs be able to pick up that sound of that actual DJ or something like that?
Well, probably not from AM. AM radio is at too low a frequency. I hope this doesn't discourage George.
Never.
But FM radio certainly goes out into space, and, of course, many other things like our radars. But the aliens could pick them up. I mean, the signals would be weak, but if they have the money to build really big antennas, of course they could pick them up. Mind you, the signal has to get to them, and since, you know, even the nearest stars are many light years away, you're talking about quite a bit of delay between when you or when they hear the program and when it was broadcast.
I love it. Seth, thanks. We've got to get you back for a couple hour show. We should have some fun. Up next, L.A. Marzulli and Russ Dizdar join us. We're going to talk about the Watcher series, of course, and the Nephilim trilogy next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. What a really great night we've got in store for you tonight. Two of my favorite guests, L.A. Marzulli, Russ Dizdar with us. L.A., of course, is an author, lecturer, filmmaker. He has penned many books, including the Nephilim trilogy, and has received an honorary doctorate for his series from Pacific International University. L.A. has lectured on the subjects of UFOs. He's got a new book coming out soon about that. The Nephilim, the ancient prophetic text, as well, presenting his research at conferences and churches, as well as appearances and interviews on media outlets worldwide. L.A. Marzulli on Coast to Coast. L.A., welcome back.
Good to be here, George. Thanks for having me on.
And let me bring in Russ, of course. Russ was with me some time ago. Russ is a licensed and ordained minister. He was a former police chaplain at the University of Akron's Police Department and was permitted to teach on the occult and satanic crimes. Russ works with the victims of satanic ritual abuse and has investigated these satanic rituals, occult crimes, and mind control. Russ founded the agency Shatter the Darkness back in 1982 to engage extraordinary underground growth of satanic ritual abuse and its connection to the Nazis, government programs, programmed assassins, and has spent thousands of hours working with many victims and in investigations of the connection and ritual crimes. Russ, thank God you're still okay. Thanks, and welcome back.
So, Still alive, George. Appreciate it very much. Thank
still
you.
Kicking. Great. L.A., tell me a little bit about the partnership with Russ, whom we think the world of.
Yeah, Russ and I go back, 10, 12 years. We were both at a conference together. We realized we were looking at the same phenomenon from different viewpoints. I was kind of looking at things coming down from the air, i.e. UFOs, and he was looking at things coming up from the ground. And we just hit it off, and we've been in, numerous conferences, well over 30 or 40 conferences together. And oftentimes conferences will just have the two of us come and speak. So it's always good to see Russ. He's a great battle buddy and a really good friend.
And, L.A., with Russ, have you come up with a specific conclusion about what you think is going on this planet?
Well, that's an incredible question. Let me just say this. Yeah, I think we're in the midst of a cosmic war, a cosmic regime change. We've seen evidence of this throughout history. It's ongoing. It's certainly burgeoning. The world is crazier now than it's ever been, more volatile than it's ever been. And there is a luciferic hierarchy. There's a luciferic agenda, which is being played out. It's being played out in film, in the music industry. It's being played out in the deep state, in certain aspects of our government. I know I've been threatened. I know Russ has been threatened. Other people that I know have been threatened by the so-called deep state. It goes back to World War II and the Nazis and what they brought in, which was then paper-clipped into this country, and that those occult underpinnings have never left this country. It gets back into Parsons with Babylon Working. Now there's a television show called Babylon Working.
Right.
You're not making this stuff up. They've probably been listening to Russ, and that's why they came up with the show.
That's a good point. Russ, what was it that got you interested in investigating satanic rituals and that kind of abuse?
Just hearing the stories. When we started hearing the stories, that was the big issue. There were so many individuals coming to us in 1980, 1982, 3. And so we formed a team to say, wow, these are wild stories. I mean, we believe that there's a dark side. We know there's really this stuff, but to hear this ritual stuff and organized stuff and underground stuff. So we began to investigate and go back, look for it underground, dig up bones, do all that, travel everywhere to Europe. So we've done that for 30-some years. We're doing it to this very day. And the evidence is there, George. All that many people fear that's out there, there's a dark thing, a new world order coming. It has boots on the ground, and it's more ingrained than we realize. It's more organized. I mean, it's deeper than even the deep state idea. Because it's supernatural, it's an interface with the dark side collective and the humans who have, call them the Illuminati, call them the ancient brotherhood, call them the secret, the shadow system, government. They're there, and they're moving forward.
And feel free, L.A. or Russ, to jump in and react to what the other or one of you is saying at any time.
Okay?
both your mics are up, and you'll be able to do that. When you mentioned, Russ, underground, it brings up to me underground bases and things like that. Do you think they exist?
Well, sure. There's evidence of that for sure. Even in the state that I live in, there's one of the big four, Wright-Patterson. I don't know how many, it's like 13 levels down. Look at the boring machines that have built the underground all over the United States. That's true in Russia. That's true in Europe. When I was at the Himmler Castle in Germany, Wedelsburg, the vast underground there. And I believe, as you look in the book of Revelation, when it talks about the wrath of God, look how it talks about the inhabitants, the ones that connect to the Antichrist. They go underground. They and even the false prophet, he comes up out of the underground. So there's no question that the underground, thousands of years ago in the Old Testament days, Ezekiel 8 shows it very clearly. They were underground, they were operative, they were organized, darkest of rituals you can think of. And yet now it's beyond anything, George, in collective human history.
L.A., what's their end game? What do they want?
Well, they basically two things. They want control of the human race, number one, but they want to be worshipped. These ancient entities, which are underground, as Russ just stated, want to be worshipped. And what's incredible, when we uncovered the Kandahar giant story, we broke that in Watchers 10. That's when I was contacted by the so-called deep state and basically threatened, because that was way too close to home for them. That giant, which was at least 12 feet tall, came out of a tunnel system. That tunnel system, I believe, connects at different points throughout the planet. Now, I can't prove that, but we keep hearing, you know, stories like this. But, you know, you mentioned deep underground bases. In my film, In Their Own Words, we have two people that come on the record anonymously because, again, they won't come on camera. We have to disguise their voice, the whole deal. They talk about being taken down into an underground base, and this one particular person was groomed. He was like, he scored really high on his tests, and he was in a branch of the armed services, but he was being sort of groomed by the brass, and these high-ranking officials would come and take him out and get him liquored up on the weekends. And one weekend, instead of taking him back to the base, they drove and drove and drove, and they wound up in this very remote area, and the mountain basically lit up, and they went down into the mountain. And he found himself, and Wesley Sangiorgi does a wonderful job bringing it to life with CGI, but he finds himself in this underground base where, you know, UFOs are hovering, and there are aliens working side by side with American Army personnel. Now, we've heard this before, but this contact that came to me was my first, you know, person that I've ever talked to that had claimed to actually been there. But then there's another witness who came on the record, again anonymously, who basically stated the same thing. Something is going on. We know that deep underground right. military bases exist, and there was a quid pro quo. There was like a Faustian pact, if I can use that expression, years ago, maybe in the Truman era, the Eisenhower era, when all this, you know, paperclip stuff, the Nazis came in, and with that came occult workings and an occult belief system that had been working all the way through the Third Reich, and it just kind of went underground, as Russ said. It went underground, and it's still here today.
Well, wasn't Hitler obsessed with the occult?
Absolutely, completely. I believe Hitler was an occult adept. I think he was completely sold out to the dark side. I also think he escaped the Führer bunker and lived to a ripe old age somewhere in South America.
Yeah, Argentina, somewhere like that.
Yeah. Right. And then you have Hitler with Himmler. Their dream was this, and they stated the goal, 200 million godmen. Now, what they meant by godmen, hybrids. They have that from spiritual secret doctrine, engagement with those entities. I stood in the Hall of the Dead there at Vadelsburg Castle, where they would sit down there waiting for those entities to communicate, to give them ideas. They would summon. They had Villigut, the sorcerer, summoning. So, George, the entire basis of the Nazis was supernatural, and that was like a massive spike in the development of this agenda. And so I look at it as an 80-year agenda, but the last 40 years have demonstrated it here and around the world, and now we're seeing the eruptions of it. But here's the point. What we see right now, what we're able to look at, investigate, and the unbelievable underground that we have, you know, been able to see, we're scratching the surface. It's bigger, it's broader, it's darker, it's menacing, and it's predicted to literally spring out after the great chaos.
Is it more intense now than it was, let's say, during the Nazi era?
I would say yes, for a couple of reasons. One is, I mean, look what occurs over there in the regional area. They call it a world war, but there was a region in which it all began to develop. It's kind of like the seedlings of the end, the very end was dropped there. So when the Nazis lost, what happened to them? Did they lose really? No. Everywhere you follow the rat lines worldwide, George, New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, South America, all through Europe, United States, Russia, every one of those places, those rat lines go. Within 20 years, the rise of satanic, richly abused people. Now, remember, that's the tools they use. Their goal, master race, hybrid or altered humans, for one reason. Himmler said, we need 200 million of them to conquer the world and to maintain a 1,000-year Reich. So that has never stopped. That has continued. It simply went worldwide, and it is broader. I'll throw out an estimate, and I know it's going to boggle minds, but we've been doing this 38 years. I believe at this point, when it comes to ritually abused, altered humans, highly demonized, programmed, we're talking four generations and 100 million on a global scale.
On this planet right
on
now.
On this planet right now.
Wow. Russ, stay with us, LA as well. Both of them are, and their websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Several websites for you there. We'll take calls next hour, of course, with both of them as we talk about satanic rituals and so many other things. David Politis, as you know, talks about missing people. Where do they go? We'll talk with LA and Russ about that too when we come back. Asheville, North Carolina, here we go. Saturday, August 25th. The clock is ticking now. Our live stage show, special guests, meet and greet, music. Just a great, fun show. Tickets are really rolling now. There are only 5 special handicap seats left. They're right there in the front section. And then there's just a few seats left on the bottom level. Then everything else is in the balcony. Where you get good seats. I mean, it's a great theater, the DW Theater, Diana Wortham Theater. But these tickets are really going. So you can get your tickets by going to coasttocoastam.com. Look for the events at the top of the homepage or in the carousel reel, and they'll take you straight there, and then you can order away. Or go straight to their website, DW Theater, DWTHEATRE, DWTheater.com. And welcome back to Coast. We're back with L.A. Marzulli and Chaplain Russ Dizdar. And L.A., David Politis, of course, a regular guest on Coast to Coast, mm-hmm. has written several books about mm-hmm. people who are missing by the thousands mm-hmm. all over this planet. They just, poof, disappear. You've looked at that a little bit, too, you and Russ. What's going on there?
Well, when I read David's book, I was very disturbed by it, and I was reading it in small doses. That's how much it troubled me. It's really, if you haven't read it, I would highly recommend it. It's a fantastic book. And some of the stories are incredibly unnerving, where a child, 3 years old, goes missing for 3 days. The temperatures drop down to the 20s. They find the child a mile away and higher up in altitude, let's say 3 days later, without shoes, and the child is warm. How's that possible? And that's one of the lucky ones. But what we see is there's thousands of people that go missing. And I mean, Pilates will state on the record that he will not go into a national park without an armed, escort.
No, he won't.
And
no,
I don't blame him after reading the book. Something is going on here. It ties back into this whole dark subterfuge, this whole dark underworld that has been going on literally, certainly before the Nazis. I mean, it goes way, way back. But it's here in modernity, and we see it manifest. Let's say, like Sirhan, for instance, who I think was MK Ultra. I think he was completely programmed. Even today, he has no memory of the shooting. There are eyewitnesses who will say that there is way more than the bullets that were shot.
Mm-hmm. More bullets.
Sirhan's gun, and on it goes. So something is going on here. And he was like an automaton when he did this thing. Has no recollection of it. And in my opinion, it was an MK Ultra. To get rid of RFK.
But, unlike Oswald, who probably didn't have anything to do with Kennedy's assassination, Sirhan, though, was one there, and they did get a gun out of his hand.
Absolutely, absolutely.
What do you think, Russ?
I think so. I think the disappearance, I looked on the news tonight, 12-year-old girl, I don't know if it was Dulles or where, just coming in from another country with a group of kids, she's gone, she's missing. Mm. A man and a woman took her. We just came back from a boots on the ground type of investigation we've been doing for years into Allentown, Pennsylvania. 1984, little Lou, a 6-year-old, goes missing. Many years later, a lady flies in from Oregon to tell us, I'm going to tell you who took him. I'm going to tell you what they did to him. I'm going to take you to the house where they ritually killed him.
Oh, geez.
She did. She's done all this. We vetted her for years. We took her just a week and a half ago to the detectives in Allentown to tell the whole story. He was abducted by design. So there's no question about the missing. Even in the you talk about the wooded areas, you got to remember the secretive level of this. The pedophile rings are doing it. We're dealing with that left and right. But this underground, George, and we've heard it for years, the reason for the abductions is the use and the practice in the context of rituals. They're trying to get even more powers.
What do they do with these people, though, Russ? Are they killing them? What are they doing with them?
Well, that's like the story with Lewis, and like tonight. I mean, George, you got us tonight. I mean, you have done it again. You've done it again tonight. Friday, August the 3rd, is Satanic Revels. Anybody can look up the Satanic ritual calendar. We're on a major ritual night. We have worked death cases on this case right here, this night, 1994. Our case, two girls, the Fed posters up on our website, the two girls, we turned state's evidence. They were slaughtered. They were abducted. They were found later in a what's called Futon Road, close to where I live. The same's true, George, about Dahmer. Nobody knows the real story. He was a multiple. He had satanic ritual abuse. He had an altar built out of human thigh bones in his apartment. Nobody tells that because in criminalistics, they didn't understand what it meant. I've seen the inside, you know, law enforcement pictures. So there's a lot that goes on that law enforcement themselves do not report, or they just say, like program shooters, the guy in Vegas, they went nuts, they snapped. It's more than snapping or going nuts. It's highly designed, and there's programming, as Ellie just mentioned. You know, we both have acknowledged that numerous times when we heard the reports. So it's all about, you know, their side needs powers here. And it's predicted that the broadest level of those powers will be here in the end of days. And that's the cause of the darkness you feel, the thrust towards violence, the unbelievable stories of brutalities of kids and abuses and things like that we know of. And that's all surface. The overwhelming majority of it's not even caught or in the news, George. We have more cases right now than ever, and most of them are not in the news. And in the abductions and what they need powers. And the demons, the dark side, the number one way to come through a doorway, human blood sacrifice.
That's right.
Are these people insane, these deep state people who try to control?
I think L.A. can answer that, too. We've done this in the conferences. We have fun together. L.A. is one of the great researchers, but we have fun together, and I know his life and his walk and his research very well, and we both know the same thing. We both, you know, we research from different angles to this, but it's the same conclusions. It comes from the same source. I don't want to say like a magus and sorcerer and wizard and these guys. It's not about insanity. Unless you think in terms, I mean, just for a moment, think in terms of the fallen cherub, Satan, Ezekiel 28. He desecrated his sanctuary. The physics of that being totally changed. Jesus said there's no truth. He's blackened. So his whole being, even with all his powers are intact, but the nature of his morality, and so the closer you embrace that, the more you yield to that, the more you believe the lie, the more entrance that side has in, and it does seem insane. Yes, it's insane. If I tell you of bodies, heads of kids, peeled off faces, you want to talk about insanity? It's an outrage.
It is.
So it's insane, but it's radical evil doing what it does.
Let me add one thing. During the Nuremberg trials, when the Nazi war criminals were being tried, some of the prosecutors just assume that these people who committed these atrocities were crazy. And I remember reading that the prosecutor literally got was sick when he realized that these guys were not mentally insane, that they were killing millions of people because they believed in what they were doing. And so there's like a disconnect. It's horrific when you start going down this stuff. I can only take it in small doses. Then I have to back away. It's just like the cat mutilations, and then the dirty little secret in the UFO community, the human mutilations, which we've heard about. The same type of thing, where these people are, and they're awake when it's happening. They're not put to sleep. I mean, they are being tortured literally to death. And there's more than one human mutilation. I actually have seen the actual autopsy reports, actual autopsy pictures of a guy in Brazil who was, you know, carved up by the so-called extraterrestrials. So, you know, again, I'm looking at things coming down. Russell's looking at things coming up. But it's the same source. It's all from the dark side. It's all Luciferian. And it's this ancient, ancient evil, which has been sort of sub rosa. But, you know, you go back into the biblical narrative and you look at Moses. It's a really interesting story because, you know, most people know it. When Moses and Aaron show up in the Pharaoh's court, there's a full-blown occult paradigm in operation. And we know that because Moses' staff turns into a snake, and the magicians that are surrounding Pharaoh just go, that's no big deal. They throw their staffs down, and their staffs become snakes too. Well, the only difference is Moses' snake eats up the other ones, and Moses picks it up by the tail, which is in itself, no one picks up a snake by the tail, but that's how Moses picks up his staff. So there's this whole occult paradigm in operation in the court of Pharaoh, and most people don't understand that. I believe that's literal. I believe it was happening. I believe the dark side was full-blown and in power during that time.
Alex Jones brought us information about the Bohemian Grove, but you too have taken a look at that as well. What do you think's happening there?
I think it's a full-blown, real human sacrifice. It's not a mock sacrifice. And as Russ and I have talked about this before, why would anyone go to a mock human sacrifice? It's like Podesta. Why go to a spirit cooking thing? What's wrong with you people? I'm going to go to a little spirit cooking thing tonight just to check it out. A little mock sacrifice just to see what it is. It's a real sacrifice. Think about this, and I'll turn it over to Russ in a second. But the leaders of the world are assembled in this place, and there is a blood ritualistic sacrifice. It's not a mock sacrifice. Someone is slaughtered during that event. Take it away, Russ.
Yeah, this is a story, George, that L.A. and I experienced in Groton, Connecticut. I was doing a kind of exposure because I dealt with a Fort Bragg Psi warrior from there. They gave me their owl necklace. They wrote out in pages and pages of papers before the Alex Jones thing. I didn't know what it was. They described it. They described the ritual. They told me the reasons for the ritual and why they bring the world leaders there. So I'm in Groton, Connecticut, doing this conference with L.A., and we already identified one of these kind of chosen, we call it satanic chosen ones or super soldiers, female in the audience. And when I came to show the picture of that ritual site, it's in the biblical sense, it's a high place. It is a major protected, very dark high place, very big porthole. So you have, and again, Ellie's absolutely right. It's not sympathetic magic. Anybody in left-hand path, they know this is a real human sacrifice. The persons that described it, the Fort Bragg Psi warrior that described it, being there, described it as real, no question. And I'm saying very definitively, it is an absolute real sacrifice. So we're in Croton, and I mention, I'm going to tell you the reasons why they do this. First, we all talk about all the world leaders brought there and presidents and everything else. The bigger question is, who are the people there that have the power to bring them there? Who are those elites that have the power? That's who we're talking about, George, the undergrounders. Now, when I mentioned that the ritual, the summoning of the powers, the reason for the ritual is similar to Revelation 16. The ritual is for summoning the spirits, and at the moment of that body being thrown into the fires in the ritual, the demonic presence they're released. It's activated. Mm-hmm. The targets are the audience. When I mentioned that in Groton, L.A. was standing right there. Here comes a woman standing up, switches to a male German-speaking personality, demonized, yelling and screaming, we must cut your head off. We must cut.
Oh,
you're telling
geez.
The secrets. You cannot do this. L.A. can tell you the rest of the story.
It was absolutely bizarre. We got her out of the room, and there was a handler, which Russ and I confronted the handler after the conference. Why did this guy bring a multiple, an SRA multiple, to the conference without telling us what was going on? And I witnessed this woman change personalities like three or four times. And at one point, and this was my first incursion into this, I'd never seen this before, and this woman started speaking in what we call a twilight language. Well, what she was doing, she was cursing us. She was cursing myself and the guy I was standing next to. And after the conference, I came down with flu-like symptoms, which did not go away for 2 weeks. I couldn't shake it no matter what I did. And I just had no energy. I felt like I had the flu. It was horrible. And one day I'm walking around my property, and I just started to pray. And I said, Lord, if someone has cursed me, please show me what's going on here. All of a sudden, I just flashed back to this woman speaking in her twilight language, and I realized what was happening. I rebuked it in the name of Jesus. I rebuked it in the name of Jesus. And within an hour, the flu-like symptoms left. And then the other guy who was standing next to me, he called shortly thereafter, and he had the same flu-like symptoms with him, and we broke it off of him. This stuff is really real. I've seen it. Russ has seen it a lot more than I have, but I've, two two very, very graphic cases where I've seen people literally just switch right in front of your eyes. And when you see it, it's like cognitive dissonance. Part of your brain's going, this can't be happening. I can't be really seeing this, but we are. And that's what's alarming about it.
Let's talk a little bit about the Philadelphia experiment. The late Al Bielek, of course, was a regular guest here on Coast to Coast, talking with Art and me for years about that. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it was real. Years and years ago, I was at a conference, and I got to interview Al Bielek, and I read his book and called him on the phone and pestered him and hounded him. But I think that, you know, he never changed his story. Even on his deathbed.
As bizarre as it was.
It's extremely bizarre. Something was going on. Something was happening. I mean, what's amazing is the military, and I've heard this from other operatives, and basically the end always justifies the means. It doesn't matter. The collateral damage, it doesn't matter. Who dies, who gets killed, what happens, it doesn't matter. The end justifies the means. So if they come up with a way to cloak a ship or a plane or whatever, and they kill a couple thousand people to do it, it doesn't matter. It's collateral damage. And I mean, I've heard this from people, who have come up to me from the shadow government and just basically told me, this is how the game is played. The end justifies the means. So I believe Al's story. I believe they succeeded partially in it. Whether or not they've continued with that, I have no idea. But I find it extremely interesting, and knowing what the deep state does and hearing it from people who have come out of that, nothing would surprise me.
Russ, are we under attack by these kinds of people?
We are definitely under attack, and we really haven't seen anything yet. That's the whole issue, the warning, the dire warning. We have, and I look at Prophecy George as God's intel, like the intel agencies. I can study them and read them and engage some of them, but the intel that God gives goes deeper than just the physical human side. It shows the source. So think in terms of the Philadelphia project. Think in terms of many of the other technological projects going on today. I used to, 20 years ago, always look at this luciferic system building as targeting, the dark side needs to target the political powers, the economic powers, and the military powers in order to do this New World Order thing. But I was wrong. There's a fourth element, technological. You can go back to Alice Bailey's externalization of the hierarchy in 1937, and the entity in her predicted that their agenda is to combine spirit and machine. This is something Scripture shows when the false prophet arises, and the image of the beast may be AI, it might be. But he doesn't just breathe breath into it. The biblical word is spirit. He literally unleashes a spirit into the creation, whether it's machine, AI, whatever it is, Revelation 13, and it becomes alive, and it speaks, and it can kill. So technology, that's the whole Nazi thing. I believe that other side needs to develop the weapons of Armageddon, the planetary defense weapons, the weapons that can bring control, the surveillance weapons that are needed to bring the control of billions. So those four elements are the primary targets. That dark side, voice to skull, voice to ideas in the head, has been going on for 80 years in the development of what's needed on the ground when this new regime rises. And I do agree with one thing with Elon Musk. He's very concerned what he sees in the world of AI. The big concern is when they learn how to, through ritual, through sophisticated ritual, to release that dark presence into that machinery that they've helped design, and then we're going to see what happens.
It's kind of frightening, though, isn't it, Russ?
Sure. It is. Listen, George, it is for the world. It's a dire warning. I'm going to just, you know me, you know the preacher in me. Jesus is still,
oh, yes.
He is the brilliant, King of Kings, Lord of Lords, God, he's the one that brings God's immortal, irreversible gift to us. That's the new race of immortals in Christ. So there is immortality coming. The transhumanists want it, but they're barking down the wrong tree. I was at that meeting in New York. When Ray Kurzweil was there, I listened to him and the technology, all the folks and inventors and the geneticists, I was there. Well, they brought on the stage Russian cosmists. George, on the stage with the transhumanists, the Russian cosmist, Dmitry Itzkoff, the billionaire Russian that was there promoting it all, here's what they said to the entire crowd.
Let's get that when we come right back, Russ.